I'm Tammy Van Dunge, your host for Executive with a Cause. Today on the show, I welcome Jessica McPherson, the founder of Blaze Your Trail and St. Kilda Mums. In 2019, she was awarded the Medal of Honor of Australia for her not-for-profit work. Today, we're going to chat about the good, bad, and hard things about running a charity and a social enterprise. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Tammy.
Hannah Andrewski from Roundabout Canberra spoke about you in one of the previous episodes, and I just had to meet you after that. So she provided that introduction, so it was lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
For those people that are not familiar with St. Kilda Mums, could you tell us a little bit about that organization and why you started it?
Sure. St. Kilda Mums is a charity based in Melbourne. In Victoria, we recycle secondhand nursery goods. So we collect donations of important items like prams and cots and car restraints, but also the everyday things like clothing and books and toys and shoes and all sorts of baby paraphernalia. And we make sure everything is clean and safe. And then everything is distributed to families in need via a network of social workers and midwives. It started in 2009 when my youngest was a baby. I had tried to donate some of the things he'd outgrown to my local op shop, and they refused to accept them. And they told me that it was illegal for them to sell secondhand nursery goods.
Wow.
And I just thought that was crazy. I really wanted my gear to go to someone who really needed a helping hand. I didn't want to necessarily donate things to op shops because I knew that op shops don't have the time. They don't have the volunteer labor, they don't have the skills to make sure everything's clean and safe. So that's how St. Kilda Mums got started. And it was an entirely community-run, volunteer-run organization for the first nearly 5 years. But we, as our kids got older, as our babies became toddlers and our toddlers started school, we sat down. The original founders, we wrote a strategic plan for how we wanted this to grow, and we carefully executed that plan, and we were able to employ me as the first staff member in 2013. So since then, the organization's grown from helping 1,000 babies and children every year to helping 20,000. And I often talk about economies in charities because when we were entirely volunteer run and helping 1,000 babies and kids a year, that was incredible. That impact was incredible. But nowadays the organization helps 20,000 children and babies every year. And in that time, a growth of a factor of 20, the income or the revenue that it took to achieve that only grew by a factor of 6. So that's the real compounding, compounding interest. That's the impact of professionalizing some of the people that run your organization by hiring dedicated staff for whom it's their job, it's their focus, and getting the right people, the right skills into the right roles. You can really have incredible impact. And that's what all charities strive for.
I think that's a great way to start, especially when we're going to talk about operations today.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the ways that you've created those scales of economy with your operations? Because that's not a small thing to do, to be able to grow, as you say, 20 times your original beneficiaries, and then to keep the cost so low that it's only 6 times the initial cost.
Yeah.
What were some of those things that created that scale?
Well, technology was critical. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love technology so much. And this is why I run a technology business today, because technology is very democratic. And particularly when you have so many technology businesses like Salesforce who make their technology available to charities for free. And technology solutions are not finite, right? So If you build for one, you can build for all. And the great thing about being a small charity in Australia today is you can apply for the Salesforce grant that entitles you to 10 free user licenses each year forever to scale your impact. And that's about $25,000 worth of licenses, by the way. And as long as you're a registered charity, then you will apply for that grant. And that's globally, right? It's not just in Australia. Anywhere in the world, Salesforce offer these 10 free user licenses. And it's exactly the same software that large global companies use. It's the same software that Nike use or Mercedes-Benz. And the only real cost for the charity is, of course, the people to set it up and customize it and use it. So for a tiny charity like St Kilda Mums, we didn't actually get Salesforce until I was employed. It was my initiative. The first two things I did in 2013 were get Salesforce for our CRM and get Xero for our accounting. And then I set about teaching myself, but I knew nothing. And I relied on volunteers. And a pattern started to emerge, which was that the skilled volunteers who were helping me customize our Salesforce instance were getting employed quite quickly. Within sort of 3 or 6 months of getting involved as a volunteer, they would be letting me know that they'd won their first job in Australia. A lot of these volunteers were migrants, you see, and they were looking for local work experience to help them break into the Australian workforce. And I realized that there was a double social good happening here. There was the fact that these skilled volunteers were helping us scale up and use technology for more and more good, but at the same time, it was helping them get the work experience they needed to demonstrate to employers that they were job ready. And I thought, there has to be something in this, you know, there's got to be something in it. The idea of the social enterprise was part of the St Kilda Mum strategic plan around income diversification. We were thinking of social enterprises that could help generate untied income that could support our mission. And a lot of charities have got op shops. I mean, you think about, or thrift stores as they're known elsewhere. Most large charities that deliver social services also operate thrift stores, and it generates a lot of untied income. But we felt that there were enough of these businesses around, and we wanted to do something different. And I started to investigate the possibility of a social enterprise that provides technology consulting to our sector. And I experimented with a few little projects and talked to people about my ideas. I thought it was a goer, but when I pitched to my board that this was an opportunity that I thought we should take, it happened to coincide right in the middle of the pandemic. So it was at the beginning of 2021. And for Melbourne, it was just before the third of 6 lockdowns. And my board had no appetite for that kind of risk. But I'd already checked out, right? I was already deep down. This is what I'm going to be doing next. So I resigned my position, and I had some long service leave and some holiday leave owing. And I had income for about 12 weeks. And I thought, well, this is it. 12 weeks, that's plenty of time to start a business. And I just started doing it. Oh, never run a consultancy business before. Had no idea what I was doing, but gave it a crack. So here we are.
So Jessica, I want to go back in time, because a lot of the things you just said are a bit crazy, right? You started a not-for-profit. You became the CEO of that not-for-profit. And then somewhere down the road, you must have developed some Salesforce skills, decided to start another entity because your board wasn't ready to take it on as within the organization with a different mission. Like, that doesn't make any sense for most people because it's such a different set of skills. So maybe I should ask a question. Was St. Kilda's Mums your first startup?
St Kilda Mums wasn't my first startup, because I moved from New Zealand to Australia in the early noughties, so in 2000, and I came here to sell New Zealand wine. And I
launched Oyster Bay Wines Australia. So that was a wine that hadn't been sold in the Australian market and was completely unknown, was a lot more expensive than the, you know, the popular wines of the day. And I wrote a business plan and a strategy and hired a team and set up distribution all over Australia. And within 2 years, very ambitious business goal, which was to become the number one New Zealand wine sold in Australia. And within 2 years, we had actually become the number one white wine sold in Australia. So we were just, it was perfect timing. It was that the change in consumer taste away from, you know, alcoholic wines that you know, particularly a lot of red wine was very, very high in alcohol, and people just wanted to drink lower alcohol white wine that was fruity and great in an ice bucket. And yeah, we were in the right place at the right time. But we also wrote a very clear and concise plan for how we were going to achieve this, and executed the plan, and it all came together very nicely. So yes, I have some experience in sales and marketing, and I was able to apply those skills to establishing a charity. And how that sort of played out was, people presumed that St Kilda Mums was a much larger charity than it was, because we were very professional with things like our branding and our style guide and our use of fonts and our language, and I had all of these systems and processes in place, and people would often be surprised to discover that we were in fact just a tiny little grassroots organization run by a few mums, because we presented to the outside world in a much more professional way. And that's my marketing background, and that is very, you know, is still a huge part of how I like to do business now with Blaze Your Trail. It's very important to me, you know, the generation of quality content, having a beautiful website, writing lots of stories, success stories and case studies, that all harks back to those early days of sales and marketing in the wine trade.
So for people that are not familiar with Oyster Bay, I moved to Australia 16 years ago. It was probably one of the very first New Zealand wines I actually liked. And it is it's just a well-known brand here now. But I can only imagine what it was like for you to take it to market for the first time. Obviously, those sales and marketing skills have been very transferable across the various things you've done. But Salesforce itself is a technical skill set that a lot of sales and marketers would not be able to translate to. So how did you manage to do that, to go from an executive, also an operator, but someone who could now provide consulting advice for Salesforce itself?
Yeah, I think I've always had a big interest in technology. So I was 13 when my father came home with a Commodore 64 computer. When I was in high school, I used to type up all of my schoolwork on the computer and print it out. And so I've been an early adopter of technology. I actually bought myself a Palm Pilot back in the year 2000, you know, when I was selling wine, because I've always had a big interest in technology. But the great thing about Salesforce today is you don't have to be a software developer to use it, because a lot of the tools are point and click. So you don't have to know how to code. You just have to know how to design. And there's a lot of great content on Trailhead, which is their completely free training platform. The fun and easy way to learn Salesforce is to get onto Trailhead. And it's learning gamified. So you complete modules and projects and you earn points and badges. And it's very addictive. but it's also, it's an incredible resource. And there's lots and lots of other resources. A lot of resources generated by the community of users themselves. So people write blogs and they post on social media and they do YouTube videos, and it's a little bit my husband jokes and calls it Amway because he thinks I'm involved in some kind of cult, because it's not usual for people to be so supportive of their competitors being successful using technology. But I mean, the nonprofit sector is always very collaborative, and we're always very supportive of each other. But even between our sector and the for-profit sector, and even between for-profit organizations themselves, there's a lot of collaboration in what Salesforce like to call the ecosystem. And it's very welcoming. So no question's a dumb question. There's plenty of user groups you can join. And I guess for me, the learning's been exponential. So in the early years, I relied heavily on volunteers. I'd just tell them what I would need and they'd go away and build it. And then in the last 3 or 4 years, I've been the one doing much more of the building. But even today in Blaze Your Trail, which only has 4 employees, me included, a lot of what we're doing is helping people understand how they can digitize their business processes and opening them up to a new way of thinking. And in order to do that, you don't have to be terribly technical. You just have to be able to translate business processes to solutions. And that's a lot of what we're doing.
I think you know Heidi Prowse from MEAC.
I do.
Yeah, she's also Golden Hoodie. And I think that's what an award that Salesforce provides to some of their top trailblazers, I guess. So we had her on the show, and she mentioned some very similar things about that community. The interesting thing that you both have said is how it's more important to understand the business process behind it than it is about the system itself. Can we walk through, if you don't mind, sharing some advice for organizations that would like to automate and streamline their business processes better using whatever software they might have? But what are some of the things you think about when you're designing a process for the first time?
Well, one of the things I like to think about is pain points, solving for a pain point. And this is an example I often use to describe how I first took Salesforce from being a glorified Rolodex, right? So a CRM is a glorified Rolodex. But where it really started to pay off, and this was around people making donations on our website and then emailing me after they'd received their receipt, emailing me and saying, actually, I made that $25 donation for my niece's bat mitzvah, and I would like you to send me a gift certificate that says, you know, dear Rachel, happy bat mitzvah with lots of love from Auntie Johnny and Auntie May. And so in order for me to do that, I would have to open up a Word document, find a template, a beautiful gift certificate template, type in all the special message, print it to PDF, attach the PDF to an email, and then send the email out. And often I would do that and the email would come back to me and they'd say, oh, actually, no, we forgot to mention... You know, can you please? So when you're doing one or two of those a week, it's okay, right? So one or two a week is okay. But what was happening is I was getting more and more of them. And so I would sort of save them up till Fridays. And then I found myself kind of having to dedicate 2 hours on a Friday afternoon just to generate gift certificates for people. And I just realized that this was a colossal, you know, time suck. And surely it could be digitized and automated. And so I built for that. I built a solution, a technological solution that meant that, you know, that the and the first iteration, and we talk about how you design and test and improve things all the way. What I realized was that when you don't provide a solution to people, they make up their own solution. So because there wasn't an easy way to get a gift certificate, people were designing these elaborate gift certificates with elaborate messaging and elaborate number of names, et cetera. But when you simplify it, when you have on your donation form a tick box that says, please send me a gift certificate, right? then that's an automated process, no human intervention whatsoever. And the personalization on the gift certificate just says the name of the donor. So in my case, Jessica McPherson. Jessica McPherson made a donation on your behalf so that babies can sleep safely. You know, a very simple message about what the gift got on your behalf. Right. So that doesn't require the name of the person receiving the gift certificate. And my name, Jessica McPherson, is the first name and the last name fields from the checkout, right? The form that they have to fill in to actually make the donation in the first place. So that whole process could be completely automated. And so the first iteration was, let's just see if people are going to be happy. We won't give them any ability to customize it beyond their own name. And let's see if people are happy with that. And because we focus very heavily on the design and the messaging, like who doesn't want babies to sleep safely, and the fact that the gift certificate was delivered, you know, the very second you hit the submit button, the gift certificate pops up together with the receipt and the thank you letter. I didn't get any more requests for people asking for customized gift certificates because that satisfied their need. And so if you go to the St Kilda Mums website today and you make a donation, you'll actually be asked if you want to have a gift certificate that reflects a birthday or another special occasion. I think we might have christening in there. And so we kind of, what you're doing is you're surprising and delighting the donor by preempting why they might have made the gift in the first place. So that's a technological solution that saved. At that point in time, when I was the only staff member, it was taking me 2 hours. But you can imagine with many, many more supporters as the organization has grown, like that could be somebody's full-time job, just generating those gift certificates. And so that's an example of how you focus on one pain. You solve for one pain point, and then you just keep going until you've got all your pain points solved.
Look, I think that is such a great example because people don't realize how they can so easily automate some of those tasks that they have to do on a regular basis. And that's not just in Salesforce. That's a lot of other things too. Question mm-hmm. for you. When we were speaking to Hannah about how they did it around about Canberra, one of the things she said, because you implemented their Salesforce system, was yes. that they were also tracking their inventory for the more, yes. I guess, bigger items mm-hmm. in Salesforce. Now, I have not yes. heard of a not-for-profit that was doing it that way. Could you share what that process looks like and how does it sure. interact with the actual client information in the system?
Sure. It's very simple. All of the orders that come through from social workers on behalf of families come into the system as cases. So we use the standard functionality of web to case for the order form. And then Roundabout Canberra runs safety assessments of big ticket items, so prams, cots, car restraints. But there's about 12 different items that have to have very, very careful safety checks conducted because the consequence of the items not being safe can be very severe. And those items are checked using a mobile application called Go Canvas. And Go Canvas replaces paper forms with a mobile form on your phone. So it guides the volunteers through their safety assessment and it allows you a spot to take some photographs of the item and also put in a unique stock code number. So a stock code is applied to the handlebar of the stroller, for example, and secured with clear packing tape. And when that submission and the mobile application is done, then we connected that to Salesforce via Zapier, which is an integration tool, and it generates a record of a custom object, which we simply called stock item. And then when that stock item is distributed, we note the case number that it was associated with. And so it's a neat little, you know, it's we don't have to have inventory management for every item in stock. We don't have to have FIFO. We don't have any expiration dates. But it's very important that we track who got what when. And if something goes wrong, right, we need to be able to track right back to the person who ran the safety assessment. And I learned this at St Kilda Mums because occasionally a social worker would contact us and say, you know, that red pram that we picked up for so-and-so last week has a broken axle. And we need a new pram because the red pram has a broken axle. Well, we would actually go back through our records, because we use GoCanvas as well, and we would discover that we'd actually distributed a blue pram. And then what had happened was the social worker had picked up the wrong pram. Goodness knows whose pram she'd picked up, right? And delivered that, and the pram was faulty. But we had very, very clear documentation of exactly what pram had been given to whom, and we had photographic evidence. And that sort of thing would happen surprisingly often, because as I mentioned before, a lot of social services also operate op shops. And so, yeah, we wanted to be very clear. We wanted to be in the position where we could hand on heart say, everything that we've given you has gone through a safety assessment. Here's a copy of the safety assessment. And if we did have an issue, you know, sometimes we had issues with cleanliness, then it would give us the opportunity to track down the volunteer and who did the safety assessment and give them some additional training around cleanliness.
That process you just explained, I think, is very relevant in a lot of not-for-profits. But I also want to talk the technology stack you just mentioned, because what people may not realize is how easy you just put those things together. With Salesforce being such an open API, and then you also used GoCanvas, which is just, like you said, an online form tool.
Yeah.
With a simple little tool like Zapier that you don't need to be technical to build an integration between the two systems, that this is showing what a business person could actually do with a little bit of knowledge, and it doesn't require a $10,000 integration to be built to make that work.
So that
is absolutely brilliant. You obviously have been helping a lot of these organizations that look like St. Kilda Moms. It looks like you guys might have been one of the first, if not the first, and then you've helped others build very similar organizations across the country, maybe even outside of the country. The solution that you're providing now for, like, Roundabout Canberra, is that basically now such a templated Salesforce case already configured that you could just pretty much lift and shift it into the next organization and they can almost use it the way it is?
Yes, we love the idea of lifting and shifting, but what we discover is that it's much easier to lift and shift if the missions are aligned, if the work of the charity is similar. And if the charity, the customer is implementing Salesforce for the first time. But more and more of the consulting work that we are doing is where the customer has been using Salesforce for 5 to 10 years. So they were early adopters, like I was, because I implemented in 2013, 9 years ago. And unfortunately for a lot of those charities, they have to start over, because it's just, you just end up with a whole lot of customization that's no longer fit for purpose. And I think that can be quite a difficult message for people to receive, but it's something that you really have to appreciate, is that the rate with which technological solutions are being innovated means that you actually never stop investing in your tech stack, because there's always something better and faster is going to come along. Like, you think about Stripe payments versus eWay, or PayPal, heaven forbid, right? So you've got to be able to continually invest, and every organization is slightly different. So I guess what I say to people is, the Salesforce is free to use, and by the way, St Kilda Mums were also beneficiaries of free licenses from GoCanvas, right? What we were using GoCanvas back in 2011, so before we even had a warehouse or any paid staff, we were using GoCanvas to run our safety checks. They are an incredible organization that does a lot of good in the community worldwide. They're headquartered in Virginia, West Virginia, in a town called Reston. I've been there. They're amazing people. And that's what I love about technology, is the way that you can support small charities to use your solutions and then use those small charities as a case study. And in the case of GoCanvas, they were able to sell into Telstra here in Australia, our big telecoms company, because they had already partnered with us. So they can effectively say, look, if a bunch of housewives can make our technology solution work, like, surely you guys can resell it for us, right? Yeah. So it's great. It's a great use of that relationship. But I feel like have I answered the question?
Absolutely. Like, it is interesting. I don't know that charities are so aware of how desperate some technology players are willing to support them just to get a referee out of it. So the fact that you had GoCanvas, you know, to be able to be that referral site that they can go back and say that to Telstra, there's a lot of not-for-profits.
I don't think that was ever their motivation. I think that they had social good baked into their org right from day dot, you know, as Salesforce has. Salesforce had the 1% pledge from day dot, which was 1% of time, 1% of product, and 1% of profit to social causes. And a lot of global companies are now signed up to the 1% pledge, including me. Only I'm 50%. So,
well, let's talk more about that, because let's talk about your current business. What's, you know, you kind of mentioned a couple things about migrant workers.
Yes.
Can you share more information about that business?
Sure. So I guess going back to why I was motivated to start Blazer Trail, I think it's amazing to give somebody a pram, a stroller rather, or a crib, cot, some material aid when a family's in crisis with a small baby. I think that's amazing. But it's not really solving the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is poverty. And poverty comes about when people are poorly paid, because they're poorly skilled, because they are excluded from the workforce. And so I always felt that St Kilda Mums was a bit of a band-aid, but that the real long-term solution, for the feminist solution for freedom and empowerment, is actually being able to earn a living and be paid well to do so. And women need great flexibility. Everybody deserves flexibility, but women particularly who are solo parents with primary school age children need flexibility in the workforce. And a lot of employment doesn't offer you that, but technology roles do. So working as a software developer or a consultant or whatever your technology role is, you're much more likely to be able to work from home. You're much more likely to be able to log in for a few hours in the morning and then finish the rest of your working day at 10 o'clock at night if you need to. So I saw these technology roles as being a real key to women empowerment. And COVID came along and just put the exclamation mark at the end of what was possible, right? So we've all lived through working from home for a very long period of time, particularly in Melbourne, Australia, 6 lockdowns. And we know there's no going back. Like, they're never going to force us back into the office, right? It's just that the world has shifted. And so I wanted to be part of a much longer term solution to children growing up in poverty, which is their mums being able to work well paid, meaningful, flexible, and stable employment for their mums. And so that's what I'm pursuing now. But what we see in Australia is migrant who have university qualifications and work experience in their home country, but who are effectively locked out of the Australian workforce because they don't have local experience. And these people are often highly qualified. They have Salesforce certifications. They have a lot of transferable skills, but they still, because there's nothing local, because they moved here when they married and they had children straight away and they've been out of the workforce for 10 years, nobody will give them a shot. And through volunteering with Blaze Your Trail, assigning them to a pro bono project where they get to work with the client daily, weekly, build, solve, support. When it comes time for them to put in a job application, they have got two referees, because they've got me and they've got the charity that they've been volunteering for. They've got lots of use cases for those questions. You know, tell me about a time when you... they've got recent work experience, relevant work experience. And the typical time frame for somebody in my program to get their first job is between 3 and 6 months. That's if they come to classes every morning. So I teach every morning between 6 and 8 a.m. And people who come to every class and work really hard and do lots of homework and really throw themselves into the program, they will get employed very quickly. And I had somebody who got employed recently whose base salary, their compensation increased by a factor of 6.
Wow.
And I'm a New Zealander, so what I mean is the number after the number 5. And so that's extraordinary. I mean, that's completely life-changing. And I've helped lots of people go from stacking shelves in supermarkets, working in childcare and aged care in very physical jobs, doing very long shifts with a long commute at the beginning and the end of each day, away from their family, relying on childcare from friends and elderly relatives. And now they can be at home, they can be there for school drop-off and school pickup. And they're getting paid really well because they're finally having their skills valued.
So the program that you're talking about right now, how many volunteers would you have going through the program at any given time?
There's about 65 at the moment.
Wow.
And I would have 25 dialed in every morning, between 25 and 30 people dialed into class every morning.
And yeah. Do you have like cohorts? So they have like 6 months of training or 3 months of training that they start from the beginning and move forward? Or no, it's just...
No, anyone can join at any time. So there is, if you head to my website and you click on the information about volunteering, there is a minimum requirement to join the program, which is simply having completed 40 or so modules on Trailhead, which are all specific to the nonprofit sector. And once people have completed that trail mix, they're welcome to join at any time. It's self-organizing. So we communicate via Slack. All of the volunteers work together. So it's a good opportunity to flex all of their team work, their project skills. There's always going to be some superstars. There's always going to be people who are confident and speak up, and there's always going to be the quiet observers. But we try and, I don't dictate anything. I'm very much like, we're all in here to learn. We're all here to share. You know, this is the challenge. This is the customer. We know what we've got to do. Go away and organize yourselves. Come to class tomorrow morning and show me what you've done. And they come in the morning and, you know, a disparate group of people. And we're not talking, these are not Australians. There are some Australians, but there are also some folk who live in the States. We've got people in Africa. We've got people in Europe. Pretty much every time zone apart from India, because India is the middle of the night for us at 6 o'clock in the morning. But we've got people from all over the world who dial in, who work together, who collaborate and problem solve as a team. And they're disparate in various time zones, because every job seeker has their own work and family obligations. So some people work night shifts, some people get up and work early morning shifts, and it just... You know, if the time zones work, they can make it to class. That's wonderful. It's a wonderful lesson in collaboration and just giving with no expectation of return. I mean, these job seekers, obviously their expectation is that they'll get work experience. But when it comes to the volunteering that they're doing for the charities, that's all volunteering is. It's giving your time. And it's such a rich learning environment for them, because nowhere else are they going to be able to have the opportunity to take requirements directly from a client. They get to do that at Blaze Your Trail. The clients, our pro bono clients, are so grateful for the support that they will be there at 6 a.m. They'll be there in the 6 a.m. class to describe what their current problem or their current challenge is. And they'll be happy to be interrogated by our volunteers, because they know that they'll have a solution within a day or two. And that kind of skill, the access to that kind of skill is pretty rare.
Mm. So you said at the very beginning that the only cost to charities that needed 10 licenses or less was really the cost of implementation, really the people skills required to configure the system. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me that you've come up with a great solution for not just these migrant or immigrants that may not have job opportunities otherwise, in whatever country they happen to be, which I didn't realize that was so global.
Global, yeah.
But also the ability to implement these solutions quite affordably for not-for-profits that would normally have to pay significantly more. That's such a brilliant concept to do that. Is there in your mind from, because not everybody's going to have access to your resources for such implementations, is there a sweet spot for the size of an organization for implementing Salesforce in particular?
No, you can be. I mean, we're supporting organizations that are entirely volunteer run, have no paid staff whatsoever, and they've got Salesforce because their committee of management, their key volunteers are committed to using the technology and have committed themselves to learning. I've got a great story about this. There was a tiny charity that I was supporting. It only had a few staff, and their general manager used to, she was a bit cheeky. She used to come to me all the time when she got, she used to ask me, this is back when I was CEO at St Kilda Mums. And she'd say, oh, look, can I just pick your brains? Can I just pick your brains? Or can I just, what did you give me? Can I speak to you? Can I talk to you? And she, every time she hit a wall, she'd come to me and say, oh, can I just ask you how I do this? And I said, after a while, I said to her, listen, you need to commit to learning this stuff. You can't just keep coming to me you can't phone a friend all the time. You actually need to work this stuff out for yourself. So I'll tell you what. Every module you pass on Trailhead, I will give you half an hour of my time, right? I made it really transactional. And she understood that. And so she would away through the module because she wanted half an hour of my time and then discover through doing the module all the answers to the questions that she had for me. So she stopped asking me because she figured out how she could find out the answers for herself. She learned to use Trailhead. Now, the amazing thing about this story is I now employ her as one of my senior consultants. and in all of the pro bono projects with all of the customers that we have had, amazing success, and Roundabout Canberra is one of them. It's where the people within the organization, the users themselves, commit themselves to learning. And the way that we run our projects is we train every step of the way. So a typical engagement might be 8 to 12 weeks, but we would deliver at least 1 hour of training, probably two, every week for that entire period of time. And we build a minimal viable product. We implement it, and then we get people to start using it straight away. So the first thing we do is we connect their email inbox. So whether they're using Google or Outlook, we make sure it's connected with Salesforce, and they're starting to, as they go through their emails each day, make sure those important contacts are in Salesforce. And you just have a side panel when you're in your email inbox. You've got a side panel. You can see if they're in Salesforce or not. And if they're not, you can quickly add them in. So we start with easy wins, efficiency gains from day dot, so that when we get to the end of the 8 week or the 12 week project, the organization's fully adopted, right? They're up and they're running. And in the case of Roundabout Canberra, the first project we did with them, the inventory project, was actually last year. And Hannah was not working within the organization at the time, but they've got a couple of superstar employees, Jody and Miranda. Shout out to Jody and Miranda. And they just got it, right? And then they made it their business to learn. And then once they started using the solution, they would come back to us with more requirements. They'd say, how about, can we do this? Can we do that? And then they started learning themselves. And then that's when you've got a fully, that's when you've got a fully digitally enabled organization that's going to be able to grow and scale. And as I said right at the beginning, it was the key to St Kilda Mums growing by a factor of 20 was we weren't using paper forms. We were using a digital solution.
There's so many learnings from this show that I think a lot of organizations should be able to take on board. Yeah, I'm also conscious we're out of time, so I'd love to ask more questions. We might have to do it over coffee one day next time I'm in Melbourne. if people want to know more about Blazer Trails, sure, or you in person, what is the best way to find that information?
Well, I've got a website with as much information as I can possibly pack into it. So there are some case studies and there's some profiles of the job seekers on the website. There are some how-to documentation, there's some white papers, there's plenty of information to read through on the site, plus a contact form to get in touch with me. But also I'd ask people to maybe connect with me on LinkedIn, because I do, that's my social media platform of preference for today. And I share a lot of content there. So please do connect with me on LinkedIn. You can book half an hour of my time. So when you go to my website, there's an easy way to book a 30-minute consultation. I will give anyone 30 minutes of my time if they're interested in anything, really. It doesn't have to be, you know, a prospective Salesforce implementation project. It can really be anything to do with your mission, driving impact, measuring impact. I give a lot of advice to small charities about how to register your charity, how to get DGR1 status, which is the ability to have your donations tax deductible. There's all sorts of things I'm happy to talk to people about. And anybody who's involved in a mission-driven, purpose-driven organization, half an hour of my time is a great way for me to help drive those missions forward. And sometimes speaking to somebody who's been there and done it before and learned the hard way is a really good way to save yourself from pain. And when I was first starting out with St. Kilda Mums, I had 4 purpose leaders who were incredibly generous with their time, and I'm forever grateful. And I just feel like it's paying it forward, and I'm always happy to speak to people.
And what's your website address?
It's blazeyourtrail.org.
Okay. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes as well. Jessica, great. It's been lovely to get to know you better. I think you have such a great career history with, you know, going from the wine selling business to working with St. Kilda's Mums and other organizations very similar to now having a Salesforce organization that is not only helping implement these things into charities, but also helping a workforce that may not otherwise be able to get the kind of jobs that they deserve because of their skill set. Just fascinating. From a lessons learned perspective, the idea that not-for-profits need to continue to invest into their IT and also their own learnings on how to use it. I think that's something that a lot of organizations fail to do well. And I hope that people will take that on board. Thank you for your time today and everything that you and your team do.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Tammy again. When I'm not doing podcasts, I'm helping not-for-profits with IT decisions. The question for this week's IT in Plain English segment is, what is 2FA, or two-factor authentication? Two-factor authentication is a cybersecurity process that helps verify that a person is who they say they are. You may have already experienced this with your social media or bank accounts. This occurs after you log in your username and password, and then the app will send you either a text message or an email with a security code that you must enter to proceed. The same should occur with your login into your organization's systems on a regular basis. Now, if you're using Microsoft 365, your IT administrator can set up a policy for how frequently you must authenticate your devices. The problem I see too often, unfortunately, is that 2FA has not been turned on for your other applications used in the workplace. This leaves you and the organization vulnerable to phishing attacks where they can take over your user account too easily. As an example, have you or a friend ever had their Facebook account hacked and then someone else sends messages to all your contacts? Well, if you had 2FA turned on, this is less likely to occur. The same is true for your organization. To reduce cybersecurity risks, make sure that every application your staff uses has this feature turned on, if not already done by default. So there you have it in plain English. If you have an IT question you want answered, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and send me a message. I just might answer it on the show. And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe and leave me a review. To all of you executives with a cause, the world is definitely a better place because of you. Thank you for what you and your teams do every day.